Results-driven marketing ideas, CompTIA's new security certification, healthcare security risks, and putting a value on stolen data. It's all coming up. Channel Pro Weekly, Episode 33, Cheap and Dirty. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Channel Pro Weekly, Episode 33. I am your host with the most, technology editor, and all-around fabulous developer, website, online hamster that lives in a cage and runs on a wheel all day. Matt Whitlock is my name. We also have with us senior news editor and the guy who actually gets out and travels the world a little bit, Rich Freeman.
Thank you, Matt. You are fabulous, by the way, and a hamster.
Yes. The most important part of that is hamster. And we also have executive editor, queen of the channel, and all-around awesome gal who I'm going to super miss next week, Cecilia Galvin.
Aw, thank you, Matt.
It's just not going to be the same.
I know. And, you know, for you, I wouldn't say hamster. I think I'd say handful.
Handful. But that's not really a rodent.
Okay.
Maybe, what's another one of those pets that like run on the little wheels and go up to the water bottle with the little ball at the end, you know, and
ferrets? They don't go on the wheel.
They don't go on the wheel. Gerbil. Guinea pig. I'm a guinea pig. I don't know really where this was going, but I do a lot. I kind of sit in my little cage all day. That's kind of how it feels sometimes with the daily grind. But Cecilia, you are going to be missed next week.
Thank you.
Do you want to tell everyone where you're not going to be?
I am not, unfortunately, going to be at our kickoff Channel Pro SMB Forum in Atlanta. And I was really, really looking forward to it. Unfortunately, circumstances are not enabling me to go. So, and that reminds me, I still have to cancel my ticket. Yeah, it should be great. I was telling our fearless leader, Michael Siggins, earlier today that I just love the program we came up with for this year. I think it's really just a rich kind of offering for all different kinds of channel pros and those channel pros who do different things but are also at different stages of building their businesses. So I think it's going to be amazing, and I am so bummed I'm going to miss it.
Yeah, Cecilia,
I'll miss you guys too.
You got put on the no-fly list.
Yeah. Yeah.
The medical one, not the terrorist one.
Yeah.
But now you're going to be missed, and hopefully we'll see you in May in Chicago. But it's all right. You'll be missed, but
you guys can work all the kinks out, and then when I come to Chicago, I'll just be totally blown away.
Yeah, we can go through all the stressful stuff the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we're doing a lot of things different this show in Atlanta, so we're confident because we've done a whole bunch of these, but we're also just a little on the nervous side, just because, you know, anytime we change things up any more than just a little bit, we get a little freaked out. But I'll be there, and Rich will be there, and everyone else from the team. So make sure that you come up and make sure if you're in the Atlanta area on March 2nd, you're at our show and letting us open up those skulls of yours and pour in knowledge and entertainment into your brain.
Yeah, just remember, it's a lot of bang for the buck. It's free. And there's just so many different kinds of sessions. You know, if you can't come and stay for the whole day, come and stay for half a day. If you can't come in the morning, come in the afternoon and check out the sessions then.
Yeah.
And the website is?
It's events.channelpronetwork.com, or just go to channelpronetwork.com and hit the events link and you will be transported away on the digital thing to the Atlanta event page.
And hey, if you're a podcast listener who's going to be at this event, come say hello to Matt and myself. We would love to chat with you.
Absolutely.
Matt will be the guy in the back of the room working the board.
That will be me.
And I will be the guy who just keeps stepping into and out of the room.
It's a bladder issue.
Exactly.
Very cool. So, guys, I'm sure you guys have not had very interesting weeks to talk about. I know I've been, you know, packing up what stuff I do need to bring and kind of getting everything ready for that. Cecilia, I know, has been working on the event guide. Rich, what have you been doing this week?
I have been finalizing content for the show as well, all the slide decks and the presentations and stuff like that that's going to go on stage, and all the video. We got lots of video, actually, this year at our events, and so I've been getting all that assembled and organized and, you know, as usual, writing.
Writing, yep. All right, cool. Well, speaking of writing, Rich, why don't we go ahead and start diving into some of those stories that have been posted this week. So, first up on our list is something on eFolder. Why don't you go ahead and take that one away?
Well, I think I will. Thank you. So this was some interesting news, some interesting personnel-related news concerning a gentleman named Matt Nachtrab. That's going to be a familiar name to some of the folks out there. He was an MSP for a while. He still actually co-owns the managed services business that he used to run full time. Basically for, you know, his own purposes, the purposes of his own company, he developed what turned into an RMM product that was named LabTech. Very familiar name out there, the LabTech RMM platform. Well, he and his folks at the MSP business he ran created that tool. He eventually became, you know, the full-time manager of that business, which ConnectWise invested in, and then eventually just acquired basically 100%, and LabTech became part of the ConnectWise product portfolio. Matt was part of the senior leadership team at ConnectWise for a bunch of years. And last April, he stepped away from that job. He still has a seat on the ConnectWise board, but he sort of stepped away from that day-to-day leadership position at ConnectWise. And basically just has been kind of thinking about his next move ever since then. And I have been kind of wondering ever since I realized that he was not in a day-to-day role at ConnectWise anymore, where he was going to surface. And it turned out this week we learned he is going to be the chief strategy officer at eFolder. Which is a company known for its file sync and share software, but also for BDR. And kind of an interesting story. This is one of those things where you sort of wish everyone could do this. I mean, he took some time off from ConnectWise, started thinking about what he wanted to do next, decided that backup was the area that he kind of wanted to focus on because he knew from his MSP days how critical that was, and decided eventually that eFolder was the BDR company he wanted to be a part of just because he liked the people there and admired their software, et cetera. And he basically called them up and said, "I want to work for you guys." And
really?
Yeah. And
great.
They talked about it for a while. And in fact, actually, the interesting thing was I misstated that a little bit. He initially said, "I would love to be on your board. I would love a seat on the board and a voice in where the company goes." And Kevin Hoffman, the CEO/CTO of eFolder, said, "Well, how about you become our chief strategy officer instead and work on my team and just, you know, be a full-time employee of the company?" And he loved that idea, and that's the job he has accepted. So he is now working as chief strategy officer at eFolder. An interesting thing that came up when I was kind of interviewing him about this for the article that we have on our website right now is one of the reasons that eFolder was so interested in bringing him aboard, aside from the fact that he, you know, has enormous experience and knows everybody in the industry and is super intelligent. You know, he was a big part of the process at ConnectWise that turned a whole bunch of standalone products into a suite. And apparently that's kind of on the horizon for eFolder. They've been building out a family of products. It sounds like there might be some more products coming along at some point down the road. And they view Matt as a guy who can kind of help them turn products into a platform. So eFolder will be a company to watch, I think, in 2017.
That is very cool. Good for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And good for eFolder. You know, I was beginning to wonder what eFolder was up to when it started, you know, it bought the BDR vendor, and, you know, it looked like it was just starting to make some interesting kind of moves, and wondering what was going to be the next step. So, yeah, a suite of products would make sense.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, this was a big hint, a big clue in terms of what's coming next. And beyond that, I have no idea. But they hired him in part because he can kind of help them build out that suite. So be very interesting to see what their next step is, basically.
Well, keep in touch
evolution.
With them.
Yeah.
Have him become your best friend.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, take him out to dinner.
Yeah, he'd love that.
Maybe a movie.
He'll be in Georgia.
You know what? I didn't ask him if he was relocating or not, but you're right.
See, you got all kinds of stuff to do next week. You already got a date lined up.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Good times. All right. So marketing is a thing that I would say a lot of channel pros struggle with. Would you two agree or not agree?
That's an agree.
110% agree, yes.
Yeah, marketing is a tricky thing. But we have some results-driven ideas. One of our freelance writers, Megan Santosis, put this piece together. So, Cecilia, do you want to kind of introduce what's going on here with results-driven marketing ideas?
Yes, I would love to. Well, as people listening to this podcast already know, if they're a channel pro, that it's difficult to find time for marketing. And when you do find time, a lot of times, it's not consistent. People don't do marketing consistently, and that's where a lot of the problems come in. It's like a little fits and starts kind of a thing. But this is a little bit even different from that. It is when you do marketing, here's one of the big takeaways from this story, is stop marketing technology. There's a very smart man who owns a company called Tri Digital LLC, which is a marketing firm. His name is Giovanni, and I believe his last name is pronounced Sanguli. He said that part of the problem here is that channel pros receive marketing messages from vendors. And the messages from the vendors, of course, are about new solutions and products and services and things that they could be offering to their customers, and that's great. But then it's like that's what channel pros know, so that's what they market to their customers. But their customers are not interested in receiving those kind of messages. They're really interested in buying solutions to their business problems, and I'm sure people have heard that before. So they don't care so much about the software as they care about the company that's selling them the software. So they care about your company. So when you start to do your marketing, rather than emphasizing technology, is you need to really emphasize the people who work for your company, the passion you have for what you do and helping small and mid-sized businesses get to where they need to go using technology as a tool. And the culture of your company. These are the things that make your company different from all the other solution providers who are out there. And that made such enormous sense to me. So some tips that he had on incorporating some things that make it easier for you to generate leads, like on your website, when you're incorporating into your marketing messages some things that, you know, you have an interest in, whether it's travel. So when you do your blog with a little bit of a travel twist so that people get to know you and feel some affinity for you if they're also interested in that kind of a thing. Keep things like logos of charities you support on your website also very easy. A lot of people, that could be an icebreaker for people to contact you. It's like, hey, I saw this. And we support that charity, and it's, you know, it's an easy way for people to touch base with you. So instead of me just continuing to drone on and drone on, why don't one of you guys jump in, perhaps, and talk about social media?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I'll just point out, I mean, one of the things I've been doing this week is beginning to plot out our May issue. Believe it or not, it's late February. We're already thinking ahead to the May issue of the magazine, and that will have an entire article devoted 100% to social media marketing, which is something I think that most, I'm guessing here, but I think a majority of MSPs and VARs are not really doing a lot of social marketing, media marketing yet. Mm-hmm. And they should be, because it's relatively simple, and the people I've spoken to in the past who do it get very good results from it. And so I'm thinking in particular now of Steve Hall, who is the CEO of District Computers in Washington, D.C. He's been a speaker at our events in the past. He's a speaker this year. He's going to be in Atlanta next week. And I remember last year talking with him about social media marketing. And, I mean, for him, it's really as simple as keeping an eye on Twitter or LinkedIn or whatever, looking for questions someone is asking that he can answer, or if he sees an article that he thinks would be interesting, he shares it online, and it just kind of makes him visible to a community of people on these social media sites as right. somebody who is helpful and productive and knowledgeable. And then, you know, when some of those people have IT needs, they want to switch providers, whatever, Steve's name comes to mind as somebody they should probably check out. And I mean, it's not a big investment of time. You don't really need to know a whole bunch about marketing to do that. It's just a matter of getting engaged.
Right. And that's where somebody can really let some of their technical chops show. As people are asking questions about certain things, you know, definitely jump in when you have some kind of information that you could share with these people, and they will remember that. They will definitely remember it. And another thing to remember about social media and your Facebook page is that's also a place where you can let people kind of look behind the curtain at your own company with employee awards, or, you know, what are things going on within your company that other people will remember? Oh, that's nice. That guy does, you know, they have a nice awards program for their employees. You know, that sticks with people. You know, it's these little things that you don't realize would be good messages to have out there about your company.
Yeah. I will give one piece of advice. Fairly in tune with marketing. It was one of my majors in college, amongst others. And not that I've spent a lot of time since, like, really studying, you know, marketing practices. But if you want to get results, there's two ways you can get results on social media with marketing. You can get positive results or negative results. So my only advice to people, this is a very politically charged climate right now. And if you want to not alienate approximately half of your possible businesses and, you know, potential clients, don't talk about politics. Don't make a statement. Keep your business separate. Keep your personal opinion separate. Don't put them on social media. That's my only word of advice right now.
That's a good tip.
That's a good
and
one.
It's a nuance, basically, to what Celia was talking about before and what the article really talks about, this idea of, you know, sharing your personal thoughts and passions and letting people kind of get to know you as a human being. There are limits maybe to that. You know, you could let people in on aspects of your life that might do more harm than good in terms of marketing.
And trust me, you may get a lot of positive feedback from one side of the aisle or the other, but it's gonna bite you in the butt in the end. So just don't do it. Politics, religion, and sports. Don't go there with your business marketing. Okay, that's all I'm gonna say. All right. We got something from CompTIA. CompTIA has some certifications for. New certifications for security analysts. Who did this one? Was this you, Rich?
It is.
Yeah. So what's CompTIA up to? I haven't gotten a chance to go to any of their events this year, so I'm a little behind on the CompTIA stuff.
Well, this was kind of interesting. I mean, and it sort of follows on to something that we were talking about on last week's show. We were talking about security technologies and next generation tools. Security analytics is one of the, we were mostly talking about EDR last week, but security analytics is another one of these sort of emerging technologies in the security world right now. And so what CompTIA has done actually is add a new certification program to their existing security offerings that's really focused on security analytics and using those tools and that kind of information to kind of hunt down, you know, telltale signs of trouble on a network. And it was just so it's interesting on its own. I think it's worth mentioning on its own on the show just because CompTIA does very good training. I mean, their certification programs are highly regarded within the channel. So if you're interested in what's kind of cutting edge in security right now or just interested in deepening your security chops, this is something that you might want to check out. But it was interesting to me as well, just because we were kind of talking about how these tools are sort of, you know, coming into circulation now, and it's a little unclear sometimes which ones are going to endure and which aren't. And then just a few days after we have that conversation, CompTIA kind of, you know, essentially places a big bet on one of these categories. They basically, and I should say, they told me, they initially had other plans in terms of what, you know, new security training program they were going to create. The reason they went with this particular one is feedback from members who said, boy, I could really use some help with this kind of a thing. So it's just a sign, basically, of how the security technology space is changing. It's further evidence, essentially, that the sort of old school security technologies really are being accompanied, supplemented with these new school next generation tools. And if you're doing security now, if you're thinking about doing security in the future, which from a business standpoint I think is a wise thought to have, this is just further evidence that you need to kind of understand some of these newfangled technologies that are coming out.
Yeah, this is a no-brainer. This is, and I'm going to point out something here that is in this release that I find interesting. So if this stat is true, and according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, I do buy their stats most of the time, 18% spike in security analyst job openings between 2014 and 2024. And I'm going to tell you, over the next probably 8 years, that number is going to go up significantly because cybersecurity is a problem, and it's a big deal that people are going to be scrambling to finally address. So this particular cert is, you know, so a little bit of study time, $320 and a couple hours of your time on an exam. This is a no-brainer. And I would highly recommend everybody who wants to do security, take a look at this.
Yeah, we have a whole session dedicated to security at our event next week and the other events this year, you know, for precisely the reason you're talking about there, just in terms of the scale of the need now, which is only getting bigger and bigger. I mean, obviously 2016 was sort of the year of ransomware, and that created an enormous appetite for security help in the SMB space and beyond. But we also, in October, there was that denial of service attack involving Dyn.
Yeah, Dyn DNS. Yeah.
Yeah, and which, you know, the attacker basically was leveraging video cameras, and it was sort of the first really serious Internet of Things related hack. There's going to be a lot more of that coming up in you know, the years ahead here. And so what is already a big problem, like you said, and a big need among your customers is only going to be getting bigger.
And that transcends all verticals. It doesn't matter if it's healthcare. It doesn't matter if it's education, private businesses, gas stations, or government. This is going to be something need everybody has. So yeah, big deal. Cool. All right. Now that we've spread the doom and gloom talk about IoT hacks, let's all take a breather. We'll take a short break. And we come back, we got more security risks. This one, talking about healthcare, risk and security and spending, plus some stuff on competitive intelligence and a cool interview with Jessica Taylor of FineTech. Very, very good interview. So we're going to hit all that stuff. So stick around. We'll be right back. All right. And we're back. And if you thought the doom and gloom talk was over, oh, are you wrong? Healthcare, security risks, and spending are both on the rise. So while it's not good that security risks are going up, spending to combat it is going up. And that, my dear channel pros and MSPs, that is good news for you. Rich, Cecilia, who wants to take this one?
Shall I dive in?
I think you should, because you mentioned this last week, so this is a good follow-on.
Yeah, this has to do with that conference that you were talking about. So why don't you go ahead and kind of introduce this and maybe pick one or two of these slides here to talk about, and then we'll kind of send everybody to the site to read the rest of it.
Yeah, and what Matt's alluding to is a slide gallery that I put up on the site on Wednesday that draws on research. So this week in Orlando, the annual HIMSS conference is taking place, HIMSS, I forget what it stands for, Healthcare Information Management, SS, whatever.
Not HIMSS as in like, you know, like... the songs you sing in church, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
HIMSS is sort of the professional association for healthcare IT people, whether you know, working in a corporate environment or for a channel partner kind of an organization. And their annual show is like the healthcare IT show of the year. I think they were expecting like 45,000 people this year. And in conjunction with that, Trend Micro and Thales, two security vendors, both issued some research this week on some security-related trends. And so I have a slide gallery that pulls out some interesting nuggets from both of those studies available on our channelpronetwork.com website right now for those of you who are interested, and we'll link to it from the show page as well. But yeah, as Matt said, basically that, you know, the threats are up, but the spending is up as well. Thales in particular had some interesting data about this. So they interviewed a bunch of healthcare providers. 90% of them consider themselves at least somewhat vulnerable to a breach.
Oh, good Lord.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that, though, and it's like we were just talking about how 2016 was the year of ransomware and the risks are increasing and so on. The number of the percentage for the exact same question a year ago was actually 96%. So 90% is an improvement.
Oh.
Let me tell you this, though. 90% say they're vulnerable for a breach. 10% of the other 10% are in denial.
Yeah, you're probably right. I would like to think though that part of the reason why there are at least some people out there who are feeling a bit more confident than they were before is because they are investing a little bit more heavily in security solutions now. And 81% of the healthcare businesses, and these are all U.S. businesses, Thales surveyed, by the way, 81% of them plan to spend either somewhat or significantly more on security in 2017, and that's up from 61% a year earlier. So clearly there is an awareness of the dangers out there and a greater willingness than in the past to spend a little money to address those dangers. And let's see. Compliance is one of the big concerns that's driving some of that spending. In terms of where they're spending that that money, a lot of it is on the kind of stuff that you would sort of expect in terms of, you know, network security solutions, endpoint security solutions, you know, important but kind of classic stuff. One of the things that was sort of interesting is that the people in the survey were asked both how effective you think a given technology is at mitigating security risks and how much you plan to spend on that technology. And there were relatively big gaps, basically, between the perceived effectiveness of encryption, data encryption, and the amount of money people are willing or planning to spend on it. So, I mean, the people in the survey all felt, you know, reasonably strongly that encryption is a really helpful thing to do that's going to help protect them from attackers and breaches, and yet they're not quite willing to spend significantly higher amounts of money on that right now, which was sort of interesting.
It is interesting. I mean, you have to. Okay, so here's an interesting stat in here. 20% of U.S. healthcare organizations have been breached in the last year. It's
that.
One in five. 20%. It's one in five.
Wow.
So here's a results-driven marketing idea for you guys. If you want to drill that home, here's a marketing idea. You get a big sign. Stand in front of your local hospital, doctor's office, whatever, with that statistic on it, and just, like, stand in front of it and hold that up. And then underneath that, like, just say, I can help you solve that. Like don't let this be you. Hire me. You know, like, that is... That's a huge stat. Now, encryption's super important because you have to assume you're going to get breached, right? If you have endpoints open that are publicly accessible, heck, even internal ones, you have to assume those are that you're vulnerable to a breach, because that's always unfortunately reactive and not proactive in most cases. So if you have the data encrypted behind it, at least that breach isn't necessarily always going to be like a serious data leak that will get you in trouble with like HIPAA laws and all that kind of stuff. So you gotta encrypt. That's all I'm going to say on that.
And it's a really, really important point, and especially the HIPAA angle on that you brought in there. I mean, this is how much confidence the government has in encryption as a security technology. You know, the HIPAA law has all sorts of reporting requirements and notification requirements on data breaches, but they apply exclusively to unencrypted data. If you are a healthcare provider and you suffer a breach of some kind, but the only data impacted is encrypted data, or if you're a business associate, so like an IT provider that works with, you know, say a hospital or a clinic or something that suffers a breach, but all of their data has been encrypted, you are not required under HIPAA to report this, to notify, you know, patients, or the assumption is, you know, the data is safe and
right. Nobody can access it.
Right.
Just make sure that, just in case, you have to back up your encryption keys, right? So like most people, make sure you back them up in a safe way, like open up a Word document and put your encryption key in there and then just save that to, like, you know, Office 365 or, like, just on your desktop, just title it, like, you know, encryption key backup, and then you're good to go. Everybody's laughing right now because that's totally a joke, but that's, like, how people manage their passwords, so... I'm just telling you.
Put it on a post-it note.
Right. A little post-it note right on top of your monitor.
Or underneath your keyboard.
Underneath your keyboard. Write it on your arm. All right. That's good. Well, there's a whole lot of stuff in here that I think people should go and read and absorb
and
these
don't
stats.
Don't save your keys. Yeah. Don't save your keys where you save your data.
Right. That too.
Put them in two
don't save
places.
Them in unencrypted Word documents. I was just kidding. So, yeah, go and check out these stats. If you're working in healthcare or if you're eyeing that market, this is a lot of the ammunition you need to at least start working your way in on a security angle. And then, you know, if security is maybe not your 100% your business, work this angle, and then, you know, maybe then you can become that trusted advisor for all of the other needs that these healthcare organizations have that you might be able to help with, like systems, like data backup, and all that kind of stuff. So,
okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. There's another slide in here, and I just cracked up when I looked at it. So this one talks about some of the health record-related documents that are for sale on the black market. So a medical insurance card, like, you know, I wouldn't want anybody stealing my medical insurance card. Well, now I know why. Well, no. It's only worth a dollar on the black market versus a driver's license, which is $170. But where the big bucks really come in is when the bad guys get the entire EHR database. That's $500,000. So, you know, wow. Insurance card, a dollar. Your personal profile with medical insurance data, 99 cents.
God, I feel so worthless now.
I know.
Yeah, I was a little surprised on that table. Black market price attached to a comprehensive personal profile, which includes the social security number, is $5.
Yeah.
I would think. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you know, social security numbers are a lot easier to get a hold of than I realized. But
this is competition in action, guys. There's so many breaches. And there's so many hackers who have this information, you know, it's just competition. Competition drives down prices, even in the hacking
world. Right. And the thing is that it doesn't do you a whole lot of good to just get one comprehensive personal profile. You break in there, you get them all. So at $5 a record.
Right.
You know,
and then it starts to add
bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just feel so.
It just
so
cracked me up. A dollar for a medical insurance card, but $170 for your driver's license. So keep that driver's license safe. Your medical card, you can leave it at the doctor's office.
Yeah. Like I was just saying, I feel so cheap and dirty with all this stuff. All right, let's get on to a better topic than how much our data is worth when it's stolen. How about
spying on your competition?
That's okay. Right. external competitive
intelligence. That's a fun
topic. Yeah. It is a fun topic. Who wants to start off on this one?
I do. There's the story is 7 sources of external competitive intelligence. And this is related to the marketing ideas that we were talking about earlier, except that this story is really about you doing investigations of your competitive market in order that you may tailor your marketing messages accordingly. So that's how this is related. So this was kind of interesting. One of our writers went to a conference for Continuum this past year. And one of the things they had a speaker, his name was Jonah Lopin, who is the founder and CEO of Crayon, which is a Boston-based provider of competitive intelligence for marketing and sales. So that's kind of the tie-in with the market. So if anybody was at the Continuum conference, you may have heard Mr. Lopin talking about this. So
that's an unfair question, Cecilia. Because if that guy's standing in front of a large audience and he says, "How many of you here have heard of Crayon?" Everybody's going to raise their hand.
I know. I'm just kind of surprised that that's what he named his company. But, you know, that's for another podcast, I'm sure. Some of the things that he had to say here, though, I thought were really kind of interesting. And it does smack a little bit of spying on your competition. But, hey, you're just doing competitive intelligence by going on your competitors' websites. So with that in mind, think about your competitors. What are they doing? They're blogging. They're posting customer case studies. They're doing things like putting up, you know, slide shares or presentations or videos on YouTube. And all of this kind of content gives you some kind of information about what your competitors are up to. So you see what they're doing, and that enables you to differentiate your messaging from theirs. That's number one. And when they're doing like podcasts or presentations and they have guests on there, you know, look at the guest, and is that, you know, is that somebody that you might want to build a relationship with? You know, look at the whole thing kind of holistically. And a lot of companies, I like this one, and I often go and check to see, like, what vendors in the channel, who their end-user customers are. And a lot of them, you know, put up that page of customer logos. I find that pretty fascinating because that gives me a lot of information about who they're targeting. And a lot of times they're not really companies who want to work with Channel Pro, because our readers do the, you know, they focus on the small and mid-sized business market, and a lot of these vendors are really more enterprise focused. So that gives me information on whether I want to really engage with them or not. So same kind of idea is that you're looking at your customers, your competition and their customers, and you may notice that, you know, if you go back and check the customer page, that there are some logos missing. Well, is that an opportunity for you that account could be won? So this is the kind of stuff that people don't think about. They're right there out in the open. Same thing with companies that put up job descriptions. They're looking for technicians. Well, a lot of times when people do the job description, they're very candid about what goes into it. We're looking for this, this, and this. That could give you some kind of idea about what they might be working on. You know, maybe they're going to be offering some new kind of a service, and they're looking for technicians who have expertise in that area. So that at least lets you know what they're up to.
So it's all about it's all about recon.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, how many times have you heard an MSP or a reseller or whatever kind of, you know, say something to the effect of how they wish they understood better, you know, the what the companies that are up against are doing well and poorly and so on. And, there are ways to figure that out. I mean, you know, maybe not entirely, but there are certainly ways to get more information than you have right now about what your competitors are up to. And we were kind of teasing, we were kidding about this being, you know, spying on your competitors, but there's really nothing unethical about this at all. It's just a matter of investing a little time in research and just looking around for places where these clues reside. And I'll actually add one more tip to there are seven sources of competitive intelligence in this article. But I, at some point last year, was talking to an MSP who said that if he loses a bidding process, if he's one of, you know, several MSPs competing for a contract and he loses it, he will always ask the customer to see the winning bid. Can I look at the winning bid? And sometimes the answer is yes, sometimes it's no. But, I mean, when it's yes, you're going to get some information about, you know, pricing and product bundles and you know, what a competitor of yours is doing out there that, in at least in this one case, was effective.
And if
that's a great idea.
I'll throw one or two out there too. And if you're willing to throw ethics to the wind, we were just talking about hacking. You could always hire hackers.
Stop.
You could pose as a customer, and then have them bid you something, you know, to see what they're offering, see their sales pitch. That's if you're willing to throw ethics to the wind, but, you know.
We don't recommend these things.
No.
But I have to throw them up.
But you did remind me of something else, Matt, is
that I have no ethics?
Well, I'm reminded of that daily. In the results-driven marketing, there was a one of the people who was interviewed for that piece said that in a previous position that he was in, he would actually go and call people who would be on a prospect list and ask them if he could, rather than doing any kind of sales pitch or whatever, could he interview them for just 10 minutes to get some information on, you know, the kind of IT thing that they're looking for. And a lot of people would say yes. And he said, you know, you can turn that into, you know, for your blog. You know, people are looking for this. We've been talking to people in the area, and it seems that, you know, one of the big concerns is security or whatever. And he said that those people, because you didn't do a sales pitch, they remember you because they saw you face to face. You asked intelligent questions. You use the information. You know, you send them a link to your blog post or whatever. And that's a good way that when you're then, you know, looking for new customers or they're looking for a new IT provider, they'll remember you. Interesting. Different.
That is.
Very different.
Very different. Yeah, anything you can do to be different, usually different is good. Right? At least it's memorable. Whether it's good or not, I guess is you know, dependent, but it is memorable. So you know, you could also conduct your sales pitch nude, and that would be memorable.
Definitely.
But it definitely wouldn't be good.
Probably not good. So let's be careful how different you want to be.
You know those charts that have like the arrow across the bottom and then the one that goes up and the little dots are there. You have the memorable across the bottom and you have the good across the top. And every single time you think, okay, is this memorable? Yes. Is it good? No.
Right.
You plot.
Right. And then
your
there's that arrow off to the side that shows like your profit. Yeah. It points down, like indicating your profits will sink. Yeah, you don't want to do those. All right. You know, you mentioned some of the challenge there with the SMB, and that's kind of what our interview is a little bit about. Rich interviewed Jessica Taylor from FineTech on managed security and touched on a whole bunch of interesting topics. So, Rich, why don't you set this up, and then we'll take a listen.
Yeah, so this is from a conversation I had actually a few months ago now with Jessica Taylor from a distributor named FineTech. She is a regional account manager with that company, I'm guessing that a lot of our listeners maybe haven't heard of FineTech in the past, and as you'll hear, I hadn't heard of FineTech really very much until I spoke with Jessica either.
So I will confess, I'm brand new to FineTech.
Oh, okay, sure.
So let's just start right there. Tell me a little bit about the company.
We are more of a boutique distributor. So we've got 7 product lines. They're all focused on network security, mostly in the enterprise and managed services space. So they're hardware and software and VMware solutions. But that's it in a nutshell. That's what we do. So and a lot of times people will come to us when they're either not getting the service that they need from other distributors, a lot of times because they're small businesses. So we've had tremendous growth, you know, over the past couple of years. I've worked for the company 6 years. And I average, you know, 10 to 12% quarter over quarter growth. And it's really just because we're very good at servicing all customers, and a lot of times SMB customers are not considered as important to pursue and cultivate. And so a lot of our customers, a vast majority of my business is SMB. So.
Now, I was looking on your website yesterday. You have a fairly selective portfolio of partners that you represent.
Yes.
I mean, and is that a deliberate decision?
It is. It is, because we have a very specific markets that we work with. We have a lot of very good business in the MSSP space. We have telecom business. So all of our products play into what our customers are going to need. And then the SMB space comes in, especially with Awareness Technology, who we're co-partnering with here, and with Fortinet. So those are two of our major manufacturers that have an SMB focus also. So.
Now, you touched on this before a little bit when you were saying, you know, one of your strengths or focus areas is that SMB channel, because they get overlooked a little bit sometimes. But I mean, how do you sort of position the advantages to a channel partner of working with a boutique distributor as opposed to, you know, doing all their purchasing through a big broadline distributor?
Well, there's definitely pros and cons. You know, one of the pros to working with a big distributor is you can get all your needs met, but one of the cons as an SMB is you have a sales at alias that you have to send your request to. There's no one person accountable, whereas I am always accountable, so they have my number and my cell phone number and my home office number, and then I am one person that will take responsibility for resolving the problem. So it's not going into a general pool where hopefully somebody addresses it in the next 24 hours. So that tends to be, I would think, my best selling point for an SMB to come and work with us, with any of us. When we work with a team, everybody hustles on our team for that reason, that, you know, we understand that there's a lot of need that's not being met, and we're certainly capable of doing it. It's just good customer service, it's good follow-through, and it's being professional.
Are there particular kinds of security technologies that are especially hot right now, that, you know, high growth areas?
I like SIEM. I hear a lot about SIEM, so the event management, not just in the compliance space. So a lot of the stuff you see is SIEM in compliance space. But I think because of just the growth in people having personal devices, that there's going to be a need for that in all spaces, you know, especially in education. So education endpoint management is something that I have gotten my business plan for this year that I want to work on. I think that, you know, there's small opportunities and large opportunities, but they're all opportunities. Even in my kids' elementary school, they need network security for those kids. They're bringing in laptops into their network. Are their laptops locked down? Probably not. So yeah, I think that SIEM is probably my favorite space right now. And then SMB has always been my favorite for my whole career, because they respond so well to good business. They respond well to good professional management, because a lot of times they're not getting that attention, and they still deserve it. So they just, it's easy to make them happy. It's easy to do well by them.
I think you mentioned the managed security service provider opportunity.
MSSP is always a growth business.
So let's talk about that a little bit. I mean,
okay.
You know, just what you are telling MSPs about that opportunity and why that's such a growth business.
Well, I feel like VMware has really opened it up for a lot of people. So it allows a platform for management of a ton of different things, and it's scalable. So, you know, it's something that you put on your own servers, something that you can grow as you need to, so you don't have to make a massive investment when you open up your MSSP. And then so many manufacturers are coming up with VMware-friendly products that will work on that platform. So yeah, I think the MSSP space still has a lot of room for growth, especially with things moving towards cloud. I see a lot of AWS-hosted VMware stuff. So even if you are an SMB and you don't have a ton of money, you can still host VMware on Amazon Cloud and provide the same exact level of service as an enterprise company. So it's made it accessible to all companies now, that ability to offer that enterprise level of service.
So if somebody listening to this right now likes the sound of that, high growth, lots of potential, how hard is it for the typical run-of-the-mill MSP to add managed security services to their portfolio?
Well, there's a lot of questions that they have to ask: how they're going to bill it, what type of overhead they're going to need, who their market is. So it will depend on who they're targeting, what they're going to do. But it is not difficult at all. So, you know, it's a few purchases of some software and some training. And then there's reports that can be spit out, and then there's action items taken from those reports to get things down tighter, et cetera. So I don't consider it, I mean, it could be under $10,000 to get started on something like that.
And in terms of the learning curve of, you know, what sort of new skills you might need, not insurmountable?
Well, no, I mean, a lot of the things that the managed service providers are providing is just visibility into what's going on and what to do when something is going on. And so, yes, it would help to have engineers that could take action items and remediate. However, a lot of these companies provide software that will do the remediation for you. So once you identify a problem. So you may not even need that. It depends on what company you choose to go with, what, you know, and what problems you're fixing and for what markets. But it's not necessarily a 10-year training investment going back to school type of stuff at all. So because mostly what these folks are looking for is somebody to take the problem away from them you know, they don't want to have to drop everything and fix it. They want you to do that. So if you have an engineering pool that you can pull from, great. If you have a management software that provides you with remediation advice and links to rectify things, great. You know, it just depends on what your model's going to be. A lot of my MSSPs have a very heavy services aspect, and that's where they make a lot of their overhead. And so they do have a team of engineers, and that is what they want, is the opportunity to go out and provide the services, because that's where they're making their money.
All right, and that was Mr. Rich with Miss Jessica Taylor of FineTech. So she had a lot of interesting things to say. A lot of her, just when she was, especially when she was talking about challenges with SMB and working with, like if you're a smaller SMB and you're working with large distributors, how it's really hard to get customized service. I found that kind of interesting. Rich, what did you take out of that?
Well, I was kind of drawn to that same part of the interview as well. And I mean, it called to mind something that I wrote, I think, back in October. So every Thursday on our website, I have this piece I do called Vox Channel Eye, which we do these reader surveys every week, and I usually sneak a few questions onto the survey about something I'm interested in. And then on Thursdays, I write an article about the most recent questions that I snuck onto the survey. And back in October, I had asked some questions about working with big distributors, like the big Ingram Micro and Synnex kind of companies, versus the smaller boutique shops like FineTech. And I mean, basically what I found, if I recall that piece accurately, is just that most channel pros have relationships with both. That there are sort of pros and cons either way. And obviously, selection is the biggest pro with an Ingram Micro. They're going to have everything you need in their warehouse, and it's, you know, one-stop shopping in that sense. But service is not going to be, you know, especially if you're a smaller company, service is not really going to necessarily be their strong point. Whereas, you know, you're going to get some time with somebody on the phone who's really going to dive into your particular needs if you're dealing with a smaller distributor like FineTech, and they will have sometimes really specialized products that the big guys don't have, because they have to cover so much ground that, you know, that some of the really kind of specialized stuff is they just can't afford to keep in stock. So yeah, I think you know, there are strengths and weaknesses in both models, and I think it probably makes sense for most channel pros to draw on each kind of distributor depending on their need and you know their particular scenario they're in.
And why should you limit yourself to just one anyway? Right? That's like having the same breakfast cereal every day.
It's true. People do it.
People do it. But you should have more than one. Have many. Well, don't have too many, because it becomes kind of a pain in the butt to manage. But
and the other thing that some people might say in answer to that question, I mean, it's sort of like flying lots of different airlines, and this is something I can relate to, like scattering your miles across a bunch of different airlines versus somebody like our colleague Joel, who only flies Delta and has a billion miles on Delta because he takes all his business there. You know, if you do lots and lots of business with one distributor, that's going to, you know, potentially give you a little bit more visibility with them as a customer worth catering to. But I personally wouldn't recommend just one big vendor or a distributor rather, and doing all of your buying from them.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. All right. Well, speaking of Mr. Joel, we are going to be coming up, checking in on him in our kind of end of the show roundup of regular features that we do. So I've got a museum and tech pick as well, and we are going to check in on Mr. Joel. So stick around. We'll be right back. And we are back with segment 3 here of Channel Pro Weekly, kind of going into our regular end of the show kind of features. So as our regular listeners know, our associate publisher Joel Zaid Spinner travels the country week to week going to events and shows and all kinds of stuff, and practically lives on the road for Channel Pros. So we like to, you know, give him a little props, but also play a little fun, kind of like Where's Waldo, Where's Joel kind of game to see where he is week to week. So this week, where's Joel?
Well, Joel is in, he's deep in the heart of Texas at Houston at the first ASCII Success Summit event of 2017.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
Texas.
Yeah, so they've kicked off their shows for the year, huh?
How many Success Summits is ASCII doing this year?
Who knows?
Rich?
You've got the answer?
No, I don't know. I'm hoping you do. I know it's a lot.
I'm looking at their website right now, and yeah, I believe it's 9.
That's a lot. Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of shows. I'll probably go there. Are they doing one in Chicago this year?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, I'll probably go to that one.
I'm actually going...
Listeners should know that Channel Pro has a good working relationship with ASCII. ASCII comes to our events. We go to the ASCII events. We chat with them. We talk to some of their members, and you know, we get some insights on what's going on in the lives of Channel Pros, etc.
Oh yeah, no, they're a great partner of ours.
Mm-hmm.
And we almost always have somebody at all of their events. And so, just a quick note: Joel was, you know, at their Houston event this week. He sat down yesterday for about 20 minutes or so with Austin McCord, the CEO of Datto, and did a very interesting interview with him. So at some point, I'm hoping Friday, February 24th, we will have some content up on our website about what Joel and Mr. McCord were chatting about yesterday. If it's not up on the 24th, you'll almost certainly see it on Monday, the 27th. We're kind of pulling some stuff together right now, so keep your eye open for that.
Very cool. Man, maybe we can pull a segment of that for a future podcast.
Yeah.
Austin,
yeah,
he's just a fascinating guy to listen to.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. No, I was thinking the same thing. And I was also mentioning before, I'm going to the second ASCII event of the year in Anaheim about a month from now, and I'm really looking forward to it for a bunch of reasons. Lots of interesting speakers and people to talk to. But they hire sort of a celebrity guest speaker every year, and this year it's Frank Abagnale. Does that name ring a bell?
No.
No.
Do you remember the character Leonardo DiCaprio played in Catch Me If You Can?
I do.
That's Frank Abagnale.
Oh, cool.
He is now this globally renowned security and fraud specialist, and he will be speaking at, I think, all of ASCII's events this year, and I will be very interested to attend his talk.
Yeah. Ooh, now I really do want to go to the Chicago one. That'll be cool. Very awesome. All right, so Joel, he was in Fort Lauderdale and New Jersey, I think, last week. Now he's in Houston. And where will he be next week? I know where he's going to be next week.
We kind of know that one.
Well, forewarning, guys, he's going to be in Atlanta next week. But still, tune in next week and hear where he's at. And maybe we'll know where else he's been or where else he's going. So tune in next week for Mr. Joel. All right. In episode 31, we did mention that we were going to be doing a contest giveaway. It seems like some of you Channel Pros out there are a little shy, or because of our long hiatus, we got to kind of re-rope listeners kind of back into the regular routine. So we did not get a lot of uptake into this particular contest this time around. So we were kind of talking a few minutes ago, and we were thinking, well, you know, it's okay. You know, we had our break. We got to get back regularly. It's not a big deal. So why don't we give everybody another week to enter this? So your odds are good. All you have to do is send a tweet on Twitter using the hashtag ChannelProWeekly, or you know, post anything on Facebook with that hashtag ChannelProWeekly, and that will enter you, and we'll pick one person to win. I do want to thank Modern MSP who did retweet something with that hashtag, but they're not really a Channel Pro. I don't think their intention was to enter, so I'm kind of disqualifying them since they're not like a Channel Pro. They're a subsidiary of BitTitan. So I don't think they are very interested in winning a router. So it's here. It's a Linksys AC2600. It's an awesome router. So definitely make sure you enter. So we'll kind of push forward one more week and see if we can get a good winner for that by episode 34. Episode 34. So we'll do something then. And if nobody enters by episode 34, guess what? I got a new router. Sup? Maybe I'll send it to you, Cecilia. I think you need a new router.
I was just so not expecting that. Yes, I do need a new router. I need a new internet provider.
Yeah, you desperately need a new router. And actually, I was talking to, because we now have someone who is kind of cutting our shows together for us and has, you know, and we are, you know, paying them and we are now a customer of somebody and it's wonderful and we can commit to being regular. I was talking to them about ways we can improve our audio quality.
Yes.
So I know that Cecilia, because Cecilia has a kind of a rough internet connection, we have a couple ideas on how we might be able to address that. We do not have a lot of money, so we can't buy awesome new mics, but we have a couple ideas that we can do. Hopefully we can kind of improve the audio quality a little bit until we can maybe get some sponsors. So, you know, that's why you got to help us get the show out there. Tell your friends about it, get people subscribed, and help us grow Channel Pro Weekly so we can also do awesome new things on the show for you guys, like giveaways and all kinds of cool interactive stuff. I did talk to somebody the other day about podcasting who likes to listen to podcasts. However, they like to listen to podcasts on YouTube, which is not a place I would normally think people would listen to podcasts.
That's a new one.
Yeah. So I guess that's kind of a thing. A lot of people make a video version of their show, even if they don't do video. Usually just like a static logo, and they throw up on a channel on YouTube. So I'm debating on doing that for us, and it's not really that hard to do. So I guess maybe I'll do that if there's any interest. What do you guys think? Do you guys want to do that?
Yeah, I mean, you know,
I mean, I guess why not, right? I mean, the more
yeah, exactly.
Better, so, yeah, I mean that wouldn't come off of our audio feed, but I guess we can aggregate all the listening stats. I know people don't want to necessarily listen to this stuff, but just so you know, we want to make this a great show for you guys to listen to wherever you want to listen to it. So, somebody asked about YouTube, we'll find a way to get it on YouTube for you week after week, no problem at all. Just let us know what you guys would like, and we'll make Channel Pro Network the podcast for you, the humble Channel Pro. All right, time for my museum pick. So this is a fun one. I was down in the basement the other day in what I also lovingly call the graveyard, and I found a box that I completely forgot that I had. And I was kind of excited. Like, this is one of these things, like, I kind of want to, like, plug it back in and see if it still works, because I still really don't have a good solution to this particular need yet, and I do remember when I had this working a long time ago. So my museum pick this week is the Card Scan Executive 500. And Rich and Cecilia, you are going to yell at me because I took pictures, but I did not post them for you. So just go to YouTube and search, or yeah, YouTube, Google, or Bing, or whatever, and search Card Scan Executive 500. It's this. It's a dedicated hardware business card scanner. Now this is an old one. It was kind of designed for the Windows 95 era of computing. If you find a picture of the box, you'll see that it says, like, you know, Windows 95, Windows 98 SE, blah, blah, blah. So this goes back, but it was this one was a black and white scanner. It did scan both sides of the business card, and then it had, like, OCR software that you know, would pull different fields and try to figure out what was on the card and make it easy so you can, like, then move those contacts over to Outlook and that kind of thing. So if you're listening at home, I have a gallery that I update week to week with my hardware museum pick, where you can see the exact Card Scan 500 that I have. Now, I think I forgot about this because this one, I only remember having it hooked up with a parallel interface between an old parallel printer I had at the time and the card scanner. I did not realize that this thing had a USB port on it. So I might install Windows 95 or Windows 98 in a VM and see how it still works. I remember it wasn't the greatest scanner in the world, but it was helpful. At least because then I remember I was able to just throw away a lot of the cards. because at least it would have like a picture of it. So I might hook this thing up and play around with it again and compare and contrast and check it out. Now I know a lot of people these days use like apps and stuff for business card management on their phones, but there's something to be said about a dedicated scanner. Rich, how do you deal with business cards?
I am one of these sort of paperless guys, so I make sure we get the information into our CRM system, and I capture what I need, and then the card goes bye-bye.
Cecilia, how do you deal with cards?
I can't even tell you. It's too embarrassing. I asked somebody else on our team to put them into the CRM.
I'm sorry. I do the same thing.
is that a Miss Daisy task?
Yes. I go on a lot of road trips. I come home with a giant stack of cards, and poor Daisy gets besieged with. And I kind of do the smartphone thing where I take pictures of everything and then send her that.
Yeah. So we have a business card scanner. Her name is Daisy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily the most effective use of a person's time when there are little machines that can do this, but we'll have to work on that. In fact, that leads right into my tech pick. So my tech pick is, I decided to pick a more modern business card scanner. Now, there are people that use apps on their phones that that actually like have OCR stuff built in. So you like take a picture of the phone. You don't take a picture of the phone. You take a picture of the card. And then it kind of like is a little scanner that tries to figure out the information. And some of the apps work quite well. I've always found it somewhat difficult to sync a lot of those into other systems, like CRM systems and Outlook and stuff like that. They don't always seem to like have a lot of hooks that way. So a lot of people still really like a dedicated business card scanner. So that way, in one scan, they can capture all the data. And one that seems very well regarded, and I haven't played with many of these lately, is the PenPower WorldCard Pro Business Card Scanner. This is the number one seller on Amazon. It's won some, usually like, in roundups when people pick the awards. This is the one that usually wins. The CardScan brand was bought with like the old CardScan Executive 500 that I have, was bought by Dymo, but Dymo announced in January they're killing off the CardScan series. So that's not a business that they're very interested in anymore, which is kind of good, because one thing I do remember about that CardScan is that like they locked down the software like with these serial numbers that you can only install once, and then if you lose the disk, you got to go to them and buy it again. They're really picky about the software side of it. So this PenPower World card seemed like a pretty good solution. I'd be really interested to hear what channel pros out there use to manage business card data, and like what they use to capture it, save it off, how they deal with it, because I'm sure it's something that every channel pro out there, they're all meeting people and greeting cards, conferences.
The networking part of the conferences is huge. The partnerships, and there's business cards everywhere.
Right, and you're going to end up with a giant stack of them. So I'd be very curious to hear the different ways everybody deals with it. And I think that might be a fun roundup that I might do down the road. So send us an email, podcast@channelpronetwork.com, or hit us on any of the social networks or something, and just kind of tell us what you do, because it'd be kind of interesting to find out. So that's my tech pick. I will say there is a software pick that I don't do a software pick, but because I'm kind of the hardware guy. But what's the company? Iris has a software package that you can buy. I think it's like $35. And I am actually going to buy it and try it out. That you can tack onto your computer that kind of interfaces with just about any desktop scanner. So Iris is the company that kind of does all that OCR stuff. I will put a link to that. So if you are like, because I already have like a really nice scanner. Like, I don't know if I need to get another business card one. If I can make the current one work, but it didn't come with any software to deal with business cards directly. So I'm going to try this package out, and if it works, I might throw that out there as another solution for people who don't want to invest in a new hardware device, but really want to get something to help manage and business card scans and get all the data, so you don't have a giant stack of them next to your desk.
I should say, in the past couple of months or so, I've written a few times about new MFPs, some of which are quite compact, that have the ability to scan business cards, sort of a built-in pass-through business card slot.
And did it come with software to manage it, though?
I don't know for certain, but I think so. I mean, the stuff I've been writing about just in the last few months, those products tend to come with pretty robust software packages. So I'm going to guess the answer to that is yes.
That's cool, because I have to say that I've tried out a bunch of like high-end scanners, you know, like enterprise scanners, and man, they just do not give you software when you go out like into the high end. I don't want to sit and wait like 70 years for a page to be scanned. I get kind of annoyed that they don't like, you know, give you the software. Like they'll give it to you in the cheap ones, but not in the high end ones. It doesn't really make any sense.
So I quickly looked up one of these articles, which was about some small office, home office scanners from Epson. And this is from like December. And yeah, actually, it does. It comes with VizCard from Visioneer.
VizCard from Visioneer. I'll have to check that out. So this might be a fun article to do on like business card management, because I think that's something every channel pro has an issue with and needs to deal with. So that would be a fun one. Look for that in a future online article, or maybe a roundup in the magazine somewhere down the road. All right. We have Gypsy Rich, our seer of seers, fortune teller, who has this mind-boggling ability to look into the past and tell us exactly what happened with near 100% accuracy. I don't know how he does it, but it's amazing. And then he has the ability to also look into the future. And his stats there are not so good, but they're better than most. So, Rich, tell us what has been and what will be.
Let's start with the past. So every Friday on ChannelProNetwork.com, I have my In Case You Missed It piece, which wraps up all sorts of news from the industry you may have overlooked. And so I'll have some news items from the HIMSS conference we were talking about before. It was actually kind of a big week for news from processor companies. AMD, Qualcomm, and Intel all had announcements. I'll be talking about that a little bit. And then I'll be talking about some technology-inflected toys that were introduced at the Toy Fair in New York this week. So these are the products that will be either creeping you out or jeopardizing your safety at Christmas later this year. And then every Monday morning, first thing, I have my What's Up This Week post, which sort of sets you up for the week ahead by previewing the happenings in the industry and the week to come. So needless to say, the big event happening in the industry next week is our event in Atlanta. But in addition to that, in Barcelona, Spain, the Mobile World Congress takes place, which means there's going to be all sorts of mobile device product news, hardware news coming out next week. We'll take a look at that. And then we will use the anniversary of the merger of Time Inc. and Warner Communications way back in 1990 as an excuse to ponder the sad fate of AOL. I just learned this week that the 90s era AOL logo has become something that hipsters wear on T-shirts. This is totally true.
That?
There is a $40 T-shirt on the market right now that has that 90s era. It's somehow acquired some ironic cachet.
Some street cred, huh?
Yes.
Which is really funny because there was a past episode we did not that long ago where we showed one of those old AOL discs.
That's right.
Man, I should be in the T-shirt making process.
Yeah.
Oh, I tell you. Very cool. All right. Well, we are going to do a show next week, right?
I don't think so. Unless, well, we should talk about this off the air. But our normal recording date is not going to work. And I think we're all flying the day after that. So we'll see. Maybe we can sneak it in.
Okay, so to be honest, I'm not sure yet, folks, if we're going to be doing a show next week, which means it might be two more weeks to get into the Linksys giveaway.
I could just talk to myself.
I would say we could have Cecilia could go. She could fly solo, talking about whatever she wants without the guys. It'd probably be a much more interesting show than when I'm on. I don't know. Well, we are going to talk about this offline, and we'll figure it out. And hopefully, we can find a way to get a show to you next week, even if it's a short one. I'd like to be regular. I want to get something out week to week. So let's work that out. So subscribe. Yes, the best way to get Channel Poor Weekly week to week is to subscribe. We are now everywhere. We are on iTunes. We are on Google Play. We are on Stitcher. We have a generic RSS subscription link, channelpoornetwork.com/RSS/CPW. Throw that in any podcast application, and it will bring down new shows to you as we put them up. So you don't have to do anything. It's like magic. They just appear, download it, and you hit play, and you can listen when you're in the car or on the train or on the monorail or underwater or when you're doing the dishes in the bathtub. If you want to listen in the bathtub, I guess you can. Wherever you want to listen, we don't judge. Feel free. We are also probably going to be on YouTube, I guess, here pretty soon, with at least an audio version of the podcast on YouTube. And if we're going to do YouTube, do we want to do webcams, guys? Do we want to make it a video cut, or do you not want people looking at us?
I don't mind being looked at. Well, one of these days we should do that. If not every week, then maybe just try it out once.
Yeah, I guess you guys can all see this giant furball of a cat that bothers me in my office every day. See, I know he only loves me because the house is cold and my lap is warm. That's why he likes to be in here. So yeah, we'll talk about all that stuff. Soon to be YouTube. Please send us an email, podcast@channelpoornetwork.com. If any suggestions, thoughts, ways to improve, you want us to read something on the air, I want to get a reader mailbag going, but you guys are just kind of shy and nobody really sends us. No one sends me mail anymore. I want to get some mail. So send us mail. Follow us on Twitter @ChannelProSMB. We are Channel Pro Network on Facebook. If you want to follow me, I am @MattWhitlock. Cecilia, you are?
@CeilGal.
And
Rich. CeilGal.
Sorry, I interrupted. CeilGal. I apologize. Rich.
Now you know how to spell seal.
Right, I do. Not the seal as in the or kind of thing. It's the seal as the awesome Cecilia Galvin.
You got it.
Right. I'm all about it. Rich.
I am @RichFree.
That doesn't mean he's cheap. It just means he's free.
That's right. There's a difference.
There is a difference. So, all right. Well, that wraps up episode 33. Thank you all for listening. Hopefully, we'll be back next week with episode 34. So stick around and... We'll catch you all in the very near future. Have a great week, everyone.